This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Talia.
Hi, Tanya.
How you doing today?
Today is a great day. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little stressed.
No, when aren't we? Join the club. Everybody's stressed.
But it'll be okay.
It always ends up being fine.
Exactly.
I mean, not always, hence our true crime stories.
Yeah, you're right. I guess it doesn't always work out.
What do you got for me today?
I have an episode that was recommended to us by one of our members. His name is Brian.
Brian B.
Brian B. So thank you very much. But before I do, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe or follow on whatever podcast app you're listening to us now.
We'll wait. Okay.
Okay. Terry Lynn McClintock has admitted to having an addictive personality. Okay.
Okay.
When she was 8, she started smoking cigarettes and weed.
At 8?
At 8.
Oh, shit.
I know. By the time she was 18, she was also into harder drugs like opiates, morphine, and OxyContin. Her day-to-day routine basically consisted of just chasing the next high. When she was 17, she moved to Woodstock, Ontario with her adoptive mother. Terry Lynn had a rough childhood, in case you're thinking it was great. It wasn't. Her adoptive parents were violent with each other, and they also abused drugs themselves.
I was just thinking, who gives an 8-year-old cigarettes? How does an 8-year-old get cigarettes?
Right.
It's gotta be from
and
family.
Weed?
Yeah.
Right? When she was born in 1990, her biological mother was an exotic dancer who couldn't care for her. Her mother gave Terry Lynn to her best friend, Carol McClintock, who was also an exotic dancer at the time. Carol adopted her, and for the first couple of years of Terry Lynn's life, they moved quite a bit, residing all over Ontario.
So it was unstable.
Mm-hmm. Because of all the moves, she was always the new kid, and she also skipped school a lot, so she was truant. She claims she was also bullied and teased because her mom was a stripper.
Kind of hurt you.
Right.
What was her mom's name? Her stage name?
Oh, that I don't know. Damn, that would be good to know.
That would be good to know.
No, I never found it in all of the articles and information I read. So I am describing this unstable home, and it was so unstable that Terry Lynn spent some time in 2 foster homes, and she also went to juvie.
I'm not really surprised.
No, me either. Between the ages of 12 and 17, she'd gotten into trouble with the law several times for fighting and assault, and she had been charged 6 times for assault. She didn't even behave in juvie. She wrote in her diary and in letters that she was going to get revenge on the people who had wronged her, saying she was going to slaughter someone, and she would rip each bone out one by one.
Jesus!
I know.
God.
In the letters she wrote, she didn't sign her name to the bottom. Instead, she chose the moniker, quote, murderous bitches.
Fuck. Wow.
And instead of the S at the end of each of those words, she used a Z.
Oh, that's badass.
Yes. She liked to listen to rapper Necro. And in case you didn't know him, I didn't.
I do not have him on my playlist.
Yeah. He claimed he invented death rap.
Oh, okay.
Which I didn't even know was a genre, but apparently. His lyrics were disturbing. Like, for example, in his song called Dead Body Disposal, he says, and I'm not going to rap it, so I'm sorry.
Oh, that would be awesome if you did. No,
I can't. I can't. I'm too old. He said, let's talk about dead body disposal. My proposal, take the corpse to the bathtub and drain the blood out of the bastard. Strip yourself nude first so you don't get blood on your new shirt.
That's poetry.
Right?
It's definitely an artist. Very creative.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
It is. In 2006, when she was 16, Terry Lynn got into a physical fight with Carol, her mom, and she punched Carol in the face, almost causing her to go blind in one eye.
She just does not give a flying fuck.
No, she really doesn't. However, in 2008, Carol said Terry Lynn had returned home and she had changed. They didn't fight or argue, and the relationship grew closer.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. That year, Terry Lynn and Carol moved to Woodstock, Ontario, where Terry Lynn didn't have any friends, but she did get to know the local drug dealers. In early 2009, Terry Lynn was on antidepressants. She was popping OxyContin and ecstasy all day, also injecting herself with morphine, and she smoked a lot of weed.
Wow.
It's a lot of drugs.
It's a lot of drugs.
So now I'm going to tell you another part of the story. Victoria, or Tori as she liked to be called, Tori Stafford, was 8 years old on April 8th, 2009. She lived with her mother, Tara, and her older brother, 10-year-old Darren. Tori's parents were separated, and she lived primarily with her mom and brother. On that day, she got up early for school and was looking forward to the evening because she had planned to have a sleepover with friends, and she was really excited about it. On that day, Darren was supposed to walk home with Tori because they had just moved to a new neighborhood in Woodstock, Ontario. And it was the first day that Tori and Darren were walking home from their new school. Before walking Tori home, Darren walked a couple of younger children home, and after he was finished, he looked for Tori. She wasn't waiting for him outside the school, and he figured she must have walked home on her own. So he went home. When he got home, though, he realized Tori hadn't made it there, so he grabbed his bicycle and started looking for her. Unfortunately, he couldn't find her. Tara called some of Tori's friends to see if she was with any of them, but none of them told her Tori was with them. At 6:04 p.m. on April 8th, Tara reported Tori missing, and several people joined in helping her look for Tori.
As a parent, that is
terrifying. Right? Ugh. I can't even imagine.
Nope.
When Tori disappeared, she was wearing a black Hannah Montana jacket.
Oh.
That had white fur lining in the hood, a green shirt, a denim skirt, black and white shoes, and was carrying a Bratz doll bag.
Aw, cute.
I know, it's very cute. The first clue that showed what may have happened to Tori was footage from a surveillance camera from a high school that was down the street from Tori's elementary school. The video showed Tori walking with an unknown woman at 3:32 p.m. The woman was wearing tight black jeans and a white puffy jacket. Her hair was straight and black, and she was wearing it in a ponytail.
And she's just walking with Tori?
Walking with Tori. It was estimated she was between 19 and 25 and probably weighed about 120, 125 pounds. The video was released to the media. Tori's story was also featured on an episode of America's Most Wanted.
So time's going by then.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, though.
Okay.
Quickly. Soon, police received a tip that the woman was 18-year-old Terry Lynn McClintock, who I first told you about. She was in police custody on April 12th, 4 days after Tori disappeared on an unrelated charge. And I believe it was for violating her probation.
I could only imagine her offenses.
I mean, she was only 18, so she had been in juvie relatively soon before she turned 18. Police questioned Terry Lynn regarding Tori, and she denied that she had any involvement. However, a month later, she admitted to police that Tori was kidnapped by her and her boyfriend. His name is Michael Rafferty. She said that prior to kidnapping Tori, Michael had teased her that she wasn't the badass she thought she was, because if she was, then she would help him kidnap a little kid.
What is this?
I know. This is
sickening.
Yes. He instructed Terry Lynn to go over to the elementary school, which would be releasing students for the day soon. And he wanted her to pick out a little girl, saying it was because the younger ones were easier to manipulate. He told her to lure the girl away by talking about either candy or dogs, you know, kid-friendly topics. Terry Lynn soon chose Tori out of the crowd by telling her about her dog, which was a Shih Tzu, and coincidentally was the same breed as Tori's dog. She asked Tori if Tori would like to see her dog, and she excitedly said yes, she did. Terry Lynn led Tori to Michael, who was waiting in his car, parked in the parking lot of a retirement home located across the street from the high school. So that's where she was taking Tori when it was caught on the surveillance video.
So she probably told Tori the dog is in the car.
Probably guessing something like that, yeah. Or do you want to come back to my house or something like that? That's why she wasn't like kicking and screaming or trying to get away or anything.
My blood's boiling right now.
Me too. As Terry Lynn and Tori got closer to Michael's car, Michael yelled at her, "Hurry up, hurry up." And Terry Lynn pushed Tori into the car. They drove far outside of the Woodstock, Ontario city limits, while Tori repeatedly asked where they were going. Terry Lynn told her they were going for a drive, even though she said she didn't even know where they were headed. Michael and Terry Lynn hid Tori in the car under Michael's coat, which was a black pea coat, and she was laying on the floor of the back seat on the driver's side. They ended up on Highway 401, and Michael and Terry Lynn had a conversation about how they couldn't just keep her and they couldn't return her because they were just in way too deep now. They made a few stops along the way, with the first being at a Tim Hortons.
Is Tori restrained at all or no?
No. Then they stopped at one of Michael's friends' house named Barbara to buy Percocets. Then they drove to a Home Depot where Michael told Terry Lynn to go inside Home Depot and buy a hammer and some large garbage bags.
Oh, that's not good.
No. After Home Depot, they drove out into the country, and during the drive, Michael was masturbating.
Oh, God, you know, of course.
It's gross, right?
It's sick.
They eventually stopped, and Terry Lynn got out of the car and took Tori to the bathroom. So I'm thinking wherever they were, there must have been some public bathrooms. They went inside the restroom, and Terry Lynn told Tori she was a, quote, strong girl, and Tori begged her not to leave her alone with Michael. Terry Lynn led Tori back to the car and was holding Tori's hand when Michael came out of the car and picked Tori up. He put her inside of the car, and Tori was begging Terry Lynn to stay in the car with her, but Terry Lynn knew what was going to happen next and didn't want to be in the car to see it. Terry Lynn got out of the car and started to walk away, while Michael sexually assaulted and violently raped Tori in the back seat.
Oh, man, she's only 8
She's
years
only 8,
old.
I know.
What is that, second grade?
Third grade, yeah.
Third grade.
Despite being outside of the car and walking away from it, Terry Lynn heard every scream and cry that Tori made. When Michael was done, he picked Tori up and threw her onto the ground outside of the car.
Why does Terry Lynn even want a man
who
is a pedophile?
And how does this snowball?
It's mind-boggling.
Right, it really is.
Like, I mean, her boyfriend is raping a child.
Yes. Girl, I don't know. People are sick. Terry Lynn then told the police that Michael killed Tori with the hammer she had purchased. After Tori was dead, Terry Lynn and Michael loaded Tori's body into garbage bags and took her body over to a nearby pine tree that was near a rock pile. Using the rocks, they covered her bagged up body, attempting to hide it. They then tried to obscure the tire tracks they had made going into the place where they stopped. I don't know why they didn't think about their tire tracks leaving, but whatever. Back in the car, Michael used Terry Lynn's jacket to clean off, and he was cleaning off his genitals with a bottle of water he found in the car. Terry Lynn drew a sketch for the police of the area where she and Michael had dumped Tori's body, and when they found her, her body was in bad condition. She had decomposed so much that she could only be identified through her dental records. And the medical examiner couldn't definitively state whether a sexual assault had occurred due to the decomposition. Her body was found on July 21st, 2009, which is 103 days from the day she disappeared.
Wow.
Her body was naked from the waist down, and she was only wearing her t-shirt. And I've heard conflicting things saying it was a Hannah Montana t-shirt. So I don't know if she was also wearing a Hannah Montana t-shirt and the Hannah Montana jacket, but I'm just going with it. So she had this t-shirt on, and she was wearing butterfly earrings that she had borrowed from her mom. And that was it. Her autopsy showed that Tori suffered blows while still alive that caused lacerations on her liver and broke her ribs.
From a hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, he hit her with a hammer in the gut?
Mm-hmm. That's the story right now that Terry Lynn has told.
Okay.
Okay.
Because that's weird.
I know. Her cause of death was determined to be by blunt force trauma to her skull, the repeated blows to her head by the hammer. Michael and Terry Lynn were both charged with first-degree murder, and Michael was also charged with sexual assault, causing bodily harm, and kidnapping. Terry Lynn and Michael had separate trials. She pled guilty and told the police she had actually lied during one of their first meetings. She had originally told police that Michael had killed Tori, but now she finally admitted that she was the one who had done the actual killing, and she was the only one who killed Tori. She said after Michael sexually assaulted and raped Tori and then threw her outside of the car on the ground, Terry Lynn walked toward Tori. She placed a black garbage bag over Tori's head and kicked and stomped the little 8-year-old.
No.
I know, why?
Oh, that poor little baby.
She must have been terrified.
Hmm.
Terry Lynn said she hit Tori over the head several times with the hammer she purchased at Home Depot. She also told prosecutors that she was willing to testify against Michael during his trial because Michael pled not guilty. She ended up being sentenced to life in prison for first-degree murder, and she wouldn't be eligible for parole until she served 25 years. However, at the time, Canadian law had what is referred to as a faint hope clause. Yes.
Hmm.
The faint hope clause stated that anyone who was sentenced to life in prison with a parole eligibility period of more than 15 years could apply for parole after serving 15 years. This law was abolished on December 2nd, 2011, but Terry Lynn was sentenced before that.
So what does that mean?
That means instead of serving the 25 years and being and then trying to get out of prison on parole, she could do it after only serving 15 years.
Okay.
Okay. She could possibly be paroled in 2025. The kidnapping charge against her was dropped. However, during her hearing, and I believe this was probably at the sentencing hearing, she couldn't explain why she lured Tori away from school with the promise of seeing her Shih Tzu puppy. She told the court, sometimes sobbing, that she didn't wake up that morning planning on kidnapping a child. She said, quote, "Every day I think that maybe if I hadn't walked down the street that day, that precious little angel would still be here."
How about maybe if I didn't stomp on her head and hit her with a hammer?
Right. I know, this made me sick. Like, fuck you, precious little angel, right? "Every day I ask myself why. Why did I tell myself that everything would be okay? I can't honestly explain my thought process that day." While Tori's family looked on, Terry Lynn apologized for what she did. She said, quote, "A million tears would never be enough, and a million words would never be able to express how truly sorry I am." After the hearing, Tori's mom was furious.
Oh, I bet.
During the victim impact statements, as Terry Lynn was listening, she cried at one point and threw up in a garbage pail. So remember I told you Terry Lynn said she would testify against Michael at his trial? Well, during the testimony she gave during Michael's trial, Terry Lynn said that she had originally planned to pretend she tried to kidnap a girl and then tell Michael when she got back to the car that she wasn't able to do it. She ended up approaching Tori when she noticed that Michael was watching her from his parked car and she knew she couldn't fake it. She claimed she didn't know what Michael was planning. She told the court that during the two-hour drive they made, she had made conversation with Tori, learning that her favorite color was purple.
Two-hour drive?
Mm-hmm. And that she loved dressing up for Halloween. It was her favorite. She also admitted that she, quote, savagely murdered that little girl, end quote. She said she met Michael in February of 2009, just a couple months before Tori's murder. She met him at a New Orleans pizza store. Michael offered her a ride home, and when he pulled into her driveway, she didn't get out because they were having a deep conversation. Instead of going inside the house, Michael offered to go on a drive with her. They drove around Woodstock and neighboring Intersoul and chatted about OxyContin. They also had sex in the car at one point. Terry Lynn fell in love with Michael after that.
He sounds lovely.
Oh, doesn't he? During the next several weeks, whenever Michael showed up at her house, she gave him OxyContin. Michael always managed to say the right things to her and made her feel special.
Oh, stop it.
I know. She hadn't had the best relationship with men in her life. She'd been molested when she was 4. And when her mom, Carol, found out, she put a stop to it. Even though I don't think she ever went to the police about it. Before I tell you more about Terry Lynn's testimony, we're going to take a break. Terry Lynn's testimony continued where she said she had been arrested a few days after abducting Tori for violating her probation. She ended up at the Genest Detention Center in London, Ontario, and Michael occasionally visited her and phoned her every day. She told him she would take the blame for the crime and told him, quote, I'm just an 18-year-old junkie anyway, so I'll just take the fall for everything. His last visit was on May 12th, about a month later. During the visit, she touched his face, and when he looked up, he said to her, quote, you'll do anything for a little bit of love, eh? End quote.
Sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah. 5 days later after that, so on May 19th, that's when, during a police interview, she admitted to them what had happened to Tori, even though they really didn't have any evidence to tie her or Michael to the murder. And they actually had been focusing on Tori's family as their main suspects. Police had previously speculated that Terry Lynn may have snitched because she had heard Michael was dating other women while she was locked up. They also thought maybe she did it because after her first interview with police on May 15th, Michael had phoned her in jail and told her he wouldn't be visiting or calling, quote, for a while, end quote.
So she's pissed.
She's pissed.
She wants his attention, so she's going to squeal.
But like I said, police really didn't have anything to tie the murder to them. Terry Lynn said while on the witness stand during Michael's trial, the reason why she confessed to police was because it was the right thing to do.
No, that's not why.
That's not why. She said she wanted to tell the truth because it took her a while to accept what she was capable of doing, what she did. Police still wonder why she eventually confessed and said that she was the person who actually killed Tori. They could never determine what her motive was. Terry Lynn told the jury that hours after Tori had been murdered, Michael told her that they were, quote, never to speak about this again, end quote. Pages from her diary were presented as evidence, showing she wrote out a series of questions that police could possibly ask, along with the answers to those questions. She wrote this as a result of conversations she had with Michael about sticking to their story and were meant to be used if either of them had been questioned. During Terry Lynn's testimony, some spectators quietly cried and the jurors looked like they were just in a daze, horrified. Tara ended up testifying at Michael's trial, Tori's mom, and she said that her and Terry Lynn's family weren't strangers to one another. She said that around the time when Tori disappeared, she had been addicted to OxyContin and had bought some from Terry Lynn's mom. While she was at Terry Lynn's house, she had seen Terry Lynn there twice. Once was when she went to buy the OxyContin, and the other was to discuss dog breeding with Terry Lynn's mom. Tara also testified that she was the one who recognized Terry Lynn in the surveillance video from the high school, and she was the one who also reported it to the police. It makes me wonder if Tori had been picked out at random or if Terry Lynn knew her through Tara and sought her out. Other witnesses who testified were many police officers who took part in Michael's arrest or were involved in the investigation somehow.
What do we know about Michael?
Not a whole lot. One presented photos of items found in Terry Lynn's home that included a missing persons poster for Tori and a piece of paper that had Tara's phone number on it. The same officer also testified that Michael changed his status on Facebook after Tori's abduction to say, quote, bring Tori home, end quote.
Oh, that's sick.
I know. Expert witnesses included a forensic biologist who testified that a blood sample taken from Michael's car was matched to Tori's DNA. She also testified that a mixture of blood and semen was found in Michael's car on the back seat. So this happened while he was in the back seat. Michael's defense had a different version of events. He said he didn't set out that day to kidnap a little girl and was surprised when Terry Lynn brought Tori to the car. He said the kidnapping was all Terry Lynn's idea and that she had told Michael she abducted Tori to settle a drug debt. I'm only guessing when I say that maybe when she said settling a drug debt, she meant Tara owed money for the Oxycontin she got from her mom, but I don't know. She told Michael that he could do something sexual to Tori if he wanted. He claimed he never raped or sexually assaulted Tori. He didn't kill her and he didn't kidnap her, but he did help Terry Lynn clean up after she murdered Tori and dispose of the body. However, Michael's not as squeaky clean as he wants everyone to think.
Yeah, I wasn't buying it.
No. Michael's browser history showed in the months before Tori disappeared, he Googled underage rape, real underage rape, and real underage rape pictures on his laptop.
Oh my God. Oh my God. What a fucking bastard.
Between January 25th and April 7th, the day that Tori disappeared, he also searched for real rape, the best program to download child porn from.
He is Google searching this?
He's Google searching this.
Oh my God, dude. Come on, man.
And nude preteen.
He is just gross.
Oh, it gets grosser.
Oh my God.
Because he also searched for necrophilia videos. Naked girls seizing.
What's that mean?
I'm thinking a seizure. Because then he searched for epileptic naked attack.
What? Wait, back off. What did you just say he searched for?
Epileptic naked attack.
Okay.
And seizure girls.
What the fuck is this?
I know.
What is this?
I can't believe he searched for all this shit.
I have heard of fetishes, but never someone that wanted to epileptic seizure sex videos.
Right.
A whole new level of just twisted.
I know.
And I'm going to kink shame him.
Yeah.
This is bizarre. It's not right.
It's not right.
That's so weird.
Very, very weird. A couple of weeks before Tori's murder, Michael Googled children for sale and sale of babies. And on April 23rd, 2009, 2 weeks after Tori's disappearance, he Googled the movie Carla, which was based on the case of serial killers Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka. This is going to piss you off, though.
Oh, I'm already really pissed, Tanya, so.
The jury didn't get to hear this evidence, though. It wasn't allowed, and it was deemed inadmissible during his trial because the judge determined that his rights were violated because the search of his computer was done without the proper warrant.
We learned that in law school. Illegal seizures, they're just a bad idea because, what is it?
It is fruit of the poisonous tree.
Yeah, that evidence is inadmissible.
Mm-hmm. In addition, the judge decided that allowing the evidence to be admitted would unfairly prejudice the jury and cause emotional bias against Michael. The judge said it would be hard for the jury to resist the temptation to conclude that Michael was a sexual deviant and therefore more likely to have committed the rape and murder of Tori.
That's 100% accurate.
Yes, it is. And why is that a bad thing?
Because I want to send him away for life just from his searches.
I know. Gross. Besides the Google searches, police found child porn on his laptop.
Of course they did.
iPod. And 9 child porn videos on an external hard drive found in his home. The jury also didn't get to hear how on March 29th, only about 10 days before Tori was kidnapped, Michael had downloaded the little-known Hollywood movie called Gardens of the Night. It was about the abduction of a pretty blonde girl while she was on her way home from school. I think this would have been important.
And this time we can say we are trained professionals. We are legal scholars.
Yes, we are legal scholars. Police had tracked down 13 women who claimed Michael liked to enjoy choking them during sex, regardless of whether they gave consent or not. One woman said she was hesitant to allow Michael to choke her, but she ended up signing a consent note that said she agreed, quote, to what Mike and I are doing tonight, sexual choking and passing out and other things.
He's got waivers?
Right. Isn't that bizarre?
That is so strange, but good for him in a sense. Liability purposes. I know. What the hell?
The judge also wouldn't allow the prosecution to show that previous to the kidnapping, Michael really never searched for news on news websites, but afterward, he constantly went to news sites to stay aware of how the case was progressing. So that's all of the evidence that I know they didn't allow. On April 3rd, Ontario's chief forensic pathologist, Dr. Michael Palanin, that was the medical examiner that conducted Tori's autopsy, he testified that Tori had 16 fractured ribs. She had a 15-centimeter sized cut on her liver, and her head had split open in many places.
Oh, man.
This poor baby. On that day, when the medical examiner was giving his testimony, Michael came to court wearing a purple shirt. If you remember, purple was Tori's favorite color. When he arrived to the courtroom, Tori's family were shocked and angered to see him wearing purple, and her father, Rodney, just had to leave the courtroom. Don't fucking tell me it wasn't deliberate.
Yeah. How often are men wearing purple?
Michael's defense presented evidence to show that Terry Lynn was a violent and cruel person and had been most of her life. They presented to the jury evidence. Now, I'm going to warn everyone, this involves a dog. So if you don't want to hear it, you need to fast forward a minute.
Well, how am I supposed to do that? I'm sitting in the room with you.
You have to sit through it.
What the fuck are you going to tell me?
The defense presented to the jury evidence that showed when Terry Lynn was a child, she had put the family dog in a microwave until it screamed.
Oh, God.
I know. She didn't actually kill the dog, but it had to be put down due to the injuries it sustained in the microwave.
What the hell?
She had lied to her family when she did it and said that the dog had been attacked by another animal. And that's how it sustained the injuries.
The internal burning, internal cooking.
His defense cross-examined Terry Lynn also about how she originally told police that Michael killed Tori and then changed her story to say she did it just to make her look like a liar.
What does any of this matter? Because it's a felony murder and Michael's involved, right? Whether he did it or didn't do it.
Right. So when the defense rests, jury went to deliberation. The jury in his case came back with a verdict stating he was guilty of first-degree murder, sexual assault, causing great bodily harm, and kidnapping. He was sentenced to life in prison and only is eligible for parole after serving 25 years. He apologized to Tori's family when he had a chance to speak, but he insisted he was innocent in his statement. He was sentenced after the Faint Hope Law was abolished, so he's not going to be eligible for parole after serving 15 years. He will be eligible in 2036.
Canadians are just too damn nice.
I know.
You guys are too nice. Here we give them death row.
Yeah.
Well, we don't actually kill them there, but yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, even though they sit there for 20 years. In 2018, Michael, who was serving his sentence in a maximum security prison, was moved to a medium security prison. This caused a huge uproar, by the way. Terry Lynn also was originally housed in a maximum security prison, but was allowed to go to a medium security prison in 2014. In 2014, she was transferred from the Grand Valley Institute for Women, located in Kitchener, Ontario, to an Indigenous healing lodge in Saskatchewan.
I want to go to an Indigenous healing lodge. That sounds nice.
I know. I'm like, what?
I picture like a sauna, some lovely aromas.
Right.
What is this?
Incense. Aromatherapy.
Maybe massage.
Right. Sounds lovely. As you can imagine, this caused an even bigger uproar in the public. In 2018, after the news of the transfer finally made the public, even though it happened in 2014, but the government announced on November 7th, 2018, that it was changing the rules that allowed Terry Lynn to be transferred due to the massive public outcry. Following day, Tori's dad, Rodney, announced he had been told that Terry Lynn was being transferred out of the healing lodge and returned to the prison in Kitchener, where she belongs. In March 2021, Michael was accused by family members that he contributed to his mother's death by extorting money from her for years before she died. He would make phone calls telling his mom that she needed to send him money so he could pay for protection, and that he already spent time in the prison infirmary because he had been beat up, and paying for protection would be the only way he could prevent another attack. He had been attacked once while on the inside, but there's no evidence he was ever attacked again. He had manipulated his mother to send money not only to him, but other inmates' spouses, because he knew she feared that if she didn't, Michael would be attacked again. Michael's family stated that his mother probably sent him between $20,000 and $30,000 over 4 years.
Girl, she needed to practice tough love.
She did. That's a lot of candy bars at the commissary.
Yeah. Just say no. Kids are spoiled, man. Come on, people.
His mother died in August 2018 from a heart attack, and she was only 60 years old.
You would have thought she maybe would have had a heart attack when she found out her son raped and murdered an 8-year-old. Not being extorted for money.
Right. I don't think she believed it. She always insisted he wasn't guilty.
Mm-hmm.
After she died, Michael tried hitting up his grandmother, his mother's mother, for money. In 2020, Tori's dad, Rodney, made news when he asked for citizens of Ontario to honor Tori's life and memory on what would have been her 20th birthday. He asked the public to honor her by doing random acts of kindness and helping others. Since her murder, Rodney has become a child safety advocate and joined other families in 2018 in calling for stricter prison sentences for violent criminal offenders.
Again, Canadians are way too nice to their prisoners.
I even think we're too nice to prisoners sometimes.
Which is ironic since you're normally a bleeding heart.
I know, I'm very conflicted about it.
That is kind of strange about you, Tanya.
I know.
You're like Carl Pazram. Kill them all. Fuck them all. Oh, let me hold you and hug you. We're all one big happy family.
I know. In 2019, Terry Lynn made news because she sought compensation for her unfair treatment when intense public outrage caused her to go back to the women's prison instead of being allowed to stay.
Oh, yeah.
In
Yeah. She was in the healing lodge and then got sent back to prison. And that's not fair.
That's not fair. No, it was very unfair to her.
She should be compensated.
I know. So stupid.
What is this? I hate them so much. Both of them.
I know.
So much, you guys.
In her court application, which was filed on April 30th, 2019, she complained that the transfer led to the loss of her liberty and the decision to move was unreasonable and procedurally unfair and therefore unlawful.
You're in prison, so you have no liberty.
Right?
Hello? So I got put in prison and it's not fair because my liberty and freedom were taken from me.
Because I was really loving the healing lodge. Fuck you. God. I wish judges could say that. Just fuck you in this stupid ass petition. So in case you're wondering, it got denied.
Well, good.
And Terry is still in a women's prison.
Feeling sorry for herself.
Yeah, for the unfair treatment. So that is my sad, sad story of the abduction and murder of Victoria Tori Stafford.
That's so sad.
Oh, and she was cute as a button. I'm going to post pictures.
Oh, yeah. Just put a little salt on that wound, Tanya.
She was adorable. She really was. She was adorable.
I just cannot believe how asinine Terry Lynn and Michael are. Just,
I know. I'm
still recovering from the seizure porn and the healing lodge. What is this?
I know.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Well, thanks, Tanya. I mean.
You're welcome. So we have some business to attend to.
It's business time.
First, just want to remind everyone to subscribe or follow if you haven't already on the podcast app you're listening on.
And if you're listening on Apple, check out our Crimes and Consequences X Apple channel, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you will be granted access to all of our Patreon episodes by joining the Apple channel. So there's two ways to get the episode, Apple channel or Patreon. And you can find it at patreon.com/TNTCrimes.
And you guys won't have to listen to commercials.
Yeah, no one wants to do that. I'm sorry.
Nope.
Fast forward.
Tanya, no, they need to listen. You guys need to listen.
Yeah, please.
And you get early releases too.
Mm-hmm. Also, we have merch.
Merchandise.
Yes.
Crimes and Consequences. You guys want to look super sexy? You need to get a Crimes and Consequences t-shirt or beer mug or shot glass. It will increase your chances of getting lucky.
You will be too cool.
So cool.
Sporting that merch.
So you can go to our website, tntcrimes.com, and there's a button that says merch.
So check it out.
You can also check us out on Instagram. Our handle is at Hardcore True Crime and Facebook too. And I think, Tanya, we have some shout outs.
We do.
Would you like to do the pleasure?
Yes, I would love to. So hold your applause until I finish the list.
It'll be hard.
We have two people that have subscribed to our Apple channel that we would like to give a shout out to, Cindy and Sherry. And if you'd like a shout out and you're an Apple subscriber, email us at contact@tntcrimes.com. And we will be sure to include you.
Yeah, you got to give us your name.
Yes.
So we can do a shout out. Because I know there's a couple hundred people out there and we don't know your names.
And Apple doesn't tell us either. So the rest of our shout outs go to our Patreon members. Kristen, Valerie, Cynthia, Cliff, Kathy, Crystal, Nikki Nick, Phil, Candace, Megan K, Carol, Olivia, Grace, Evron.
Sounds good to me.
Erica, Greg, Kylie, Stephanie, Brittany, and Valerie G.
Oh, and I also want to really quick say thank you to Leah, who we accidentally called Lee in one of our shout outs.
We would also like to give a special shout out to Mariah.
Mariah H.
She contributes stories to our website.
Yeah, we've got a blog and it has crime stories on it and she is contributing to it. So there's some really good true crime stories on our website that I'd never even heard of before. So check it out.
Thank you, Mariah.
And I also want to thank everybody who's just listening now. We appreciate you. We know you have choices and we appreciate you choosing us. That's it?
Is it?
Okay. That's a lot. That's some business.
All right, Talia. Until our next episode.
All right. Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.